Several Wisconsin labor unions filed a new lawsuit last week challenging Act 10, the 2011 law that ended almost all collective bargaining for most public employees. The law has been unsuccessfully challenged in court multiple times since it was enacted. The latest lawsuit makes a different legal argument and could make its way to a state Supreme Court that now has a 4-3 liberal majority. We're exploring what makes this lawsuit different from previous state court challenges to Act 10 and the dynamics with the current makeup of the state's highest court. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this latest Act 10 lawsuit? Do you think the outcome will be different this time? Should be different this time? What questions do you have? Do you think Justice Janet Protasiewicz should recuse herself from the case based on past comments? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Howard Schwaber is a professor of political science emeritus and affiliate faculty at the law school at UW-Madison. Howard, welcome back to Central Time.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right. A lot of public employees in Wisconsin are familiar with Act 10. People who are around for the hullabaloo remember it. Can you remind us, though, what the law changed?
Well, Act 10 essentially abolished collective bargaining for public employees. And the biggest target by far was the teachers union, except as to very, very limited matters involving salary up to a certain point. Depending on who you ask, the reason was to save the state's budgetary resources and make school districts better able to allocate their resources. So they were able to pay some teachers less, for example, if they weren't performing well, and reward teachers who might be more junior, but were good teachers. And so to generally increase flexibility. On the other side, people who opposed Act 10 said it was a targeted effort to weaken public sector unions, which had been strongly supportive of Democratic candidates. And of course, a fair number of observers thought it did both.
Now, some public employee unions were exempted in the public safety field, thinking mainly police and firefighting unions. And that, Howard, is, as I understand it, is at the heart of this constitutional challenge in Wisconsin courts. What is this lawsuit arguing?
That's exactly right. So the lawsuit is brought under the Equal Protection Clause of the Wisconsin Constitution. And I should note right off the bat that in 1999, the Wisconsin Supreme Court said that the Wisconsin Equal Protection Clause works exactly the same as the federal constitutional Equal Protection Clause. So everything people know about equal protection law applies here as well. And the claim is there was no good reason, no legitimate reason connected to the purpose of the bill for singling out public safety employees to exempt them from the operation of this disqualification from collective bargaining. Now, there's a couple of pieces to that argument. One is the claim that since the purpose of the bill was allegedly to save money and conserve budgetary resources, only motivations having to do with conserving money and conserving budgetary resources could legitimately justify treating one group of employees differently from another. The second part of the argument is that in general, there's no good reason, no legitimate or rational basis for treating these public safety employees differently than we treat, say, teachers. So those are two sides of the same argument, which is that people are being treated differently for no good reason. And that fundamentally is the equal protection claim that's being made here.
Now, the counter argument there has been some of these public safety officers have different pension plans and things like that. They are compensated differently, different retirement benefits based on the nature of their work. So since we've treated them in contract terms differently than other public employees, that gives a precedent to do it with Act 10. Do you see that as being a likely counter argument in the courts?
Well, that by itself, I don't think is a particularly strong argument because, of course, the response is, well, maybe that was unconstitutional as well. That is, you can't really establish the constitutionality of a practice by saying, well, we did it before, because it's equally easy to say that that prior act was also unconstitutional. But here we have to get a little bit into the weeds of this thing. In an equal protection claim, it makes a big difference what kind of people are being treated differently or on what basis. So I'm sure all our listeners remember the recent case about race-based affirmative action in college admissions at the U.S. Supreme Court that got an enormous amount of press. The reason that case was argued the way it was is because when the government wants to treat people differently based on their race, it almost never is able to satisfy the required justification. There's almost never a good enough reason to justify treating people differently on the basis of their race, their religion, their nationality. And that's what's called that. Those kinds of classifications trigger what is called strict scrutiny. And the short version of that is it's sometimes called strict in theory, fatal in fact. Basically, it's extraordinarily difficult to justify treating people differently on those sorts of bases, and the government almost never can do so. That's not what we have here, though. Here, the idea is that people are being treated differently depending on the nature of their employment, and that one group of employees who are in public safety areas are being treated differently from those who are called general employees. That kind of classification only triggers what's called rational basis. It's the lowest level of scrutiny. And again, to put that in practical terms, if the government has any legitimate reason or can come up with any legitimate reason for treating people differently, that's all they have to do. And so here I would think that the government's stronger argument would be something like, look, we recognize that Act 10 was controversial. We recognize that this loss of collective bargaining might cause disruption. We can tolerate that kind of disruption in some areas, but not where public safety employees are involved. And that's our rational basis for keeping them happier. And that would be, as near as I can tell, a perfectly sufficient constitutional justification for the way the law is structured.
Now, there have been a lot of lawsuits related to Act 10. As I understand it, Howard, and please correct me if I'm wrong, this specific equal protection argument hasn't made its way to Wisconsin Supreme Court yet. But there have been federal cases under equal protection. Obviously, Act 10 is still in place, so those fizzled somewhere in the court system. If this argument didn't work in the federal courts, is there a reason to believe it should prevail in state courts?
Well, that's exactly right. Precisely this argument, or a variation, and it was brought to the Seventh Circuit, which is the federal court of appeals, and the Seventh Circuit said, no, the Wisconsin law, Act 10, is perfectly constitutional, essentially for the reasons I just described. There are a couple of reasons why you might think the Wisconsin court might rule differently. First, you might think that the Wisconsin Constitution's Equal Protection Clause works differently than the U.S. Constitution's Equal Protection Clause that the Seventh Circuit was talking about. But that's why right at the beginning I made the point that they're not, that the Wisconsin court, at least in the past, has said they work the same. So that's not a good argument unless you can persuade the Wisconsin Supreme Court to change that. The second reason is sort of pure politics. There's now a liberal majority, and so if you think that courts are purely outcome-driven partisans and the judges are partisans seeking policy advantage, then maybe these justices won't like Act 10 and will find a reason to strike it down. Those are, those are the gambles that the people challenging the law are making. And I have to say, I don't think that they will succeed. I find it hard to imagine that the Wisconsin Supreme Court will either abandon the idea that equal protection under the Wisconsin Constitution works the same way as it does under the federal Constitution, or be willing to apply that test. Now, they're not bound by the Seventh Circuit, but I find it hard to believe they'd be willing to apply that test in a way that would have so many repercussions for other potential future lawsuits and do so much to disrupt the way equal protection law is understood in Wisconsin.
Talking to Howard Schwaber, professor of political science emeritus, affiliate faculty at the law school at UW-Madison, looking at the latest legal challenge in a long series of legal challenges to Act 10, the state law restricting almost all collective bargaining for most public employees. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Howard, I want to follow up on that. We focused a lot on the legal side of things. The cynical view is what you just described there. We have conservative justices and liberal justices, or in effect, Republican justices and Democratic justices in this cynical view. None of that legal stuff matters in that argument. They're going to vote the way their partisan sympathies lie. Is that too cynical to think that way?
I think it is. I'm the first to say, and I've said so publicly many times, that Wisconsin Supreme Court elections have become hyper-partisan, hyper-politicized affairs and have strayed far away from Wisconsin, what was once the Wisconsin tradition of a nonpartisan judiciary. But this is going further. Let me be neither naive nor purely cynical. Even if one thinks it's true that the justices want to reach outcomes they approve of on partisan or policy grounds, I don't think they'd be willing to disrupt too much of the existing legal framework to get there. And in this case, you really would have to abandon or apply in a very, very different way a very broad chunk of Wisconsin equal protection law in order to strike down Act 10. And I just don't see these justices being willing to do that, no matter how much they might personally think Act 10 was a bad idea.
Now, this isn't at the state Supreme Court yet. This was in a Dane County Circuit Court to start things off. I mean, do you see it as likely it's going to end up at the state Supreme Court? I guess I've been assuming it will, because everything does. Is that necessarily the case, though?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, sometimes these things are unclear. This one's really obvious. No matter who wins or loses at the district court, the other side will appeal. And whoever wins or loses there, the other side will appeal again. So I'm absolutely certain this will come to Wisconsin State Supreme Court. It will take time, however. It's likely to be months or a year or so before the state Supreme Court hears this case. And of course, there could be further developments before then. But yes, this question is a core question of Wisconsin constitutional doctrine. It's a pure legal question, so nothing that's decided at the district court level can really prevent, you know, the issue being raised at a higher court. So, yeah, absolutely, I think this is going to be at the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
Let's bring on a caller. Jimmy is with us in Valley Junction. Jimmy, hey.
Hello, gentlemen. So my question is would it be constitutional to treat different employees differently because of their political persuasion? So if the teachers union and the county workers who got the shaft are vote Democrat, but the cops and the firefighters who supported Scotty Walker and his crew, is it legal, do you think, constitutional for you to say, you know what, you guys support me, so I'm going to leave you alone. You guys don't, so I'm going to give you the shaft.
Jimmy, thanks for the call. That political argument has been made, Howard, that this was punishing a perceived political rival and not punishing sympathetic public union employees. Will that matter? Could it matter in a court argument?
Oh, it absolutely could. That is, so first of all, yes, that would be unconstitutional and illegal. No question about it. And that was the argument that was brought before. It was a First Amendment challenge saying that certain classes of employees were being punished for their expressions of political viewpoints through their unions. The problem is that when we're dealing with an equal protection challenge at this low rational basis level of review, you would have to prove that that was actually the intention. It's obviously the case that it's sort of interesting coincidence that the unions who are most notably anti-Scott Walker ended up losing their collective bargaining abilities, and it's not at all surprising that many people jumped to the conclusion, which may even be true, that it was political retaliation or an attempt to strengthen the Republican hold on the legislature. But from a legal perspective, one would have to demonstrate that. The government can come back and say, no, we have this alternative reason you haven't considered, which is by itself rational and legitimate, and as long as that's true, as long as that alternative basis exists, unless you can affirmatively prove that it was a pretext, that it really was specifically, subjectively intended as political punishment, the fact that there's an alternative, legitimate explanation defeats the legal argument. And that's the situation that we're in here now. If Scott Walker had given a speech saying, boy, I'm sure going to stick it to Democratic-leaning unions, and that's why I'm promoting this law, we would be in a very different conversation. If you want a comparison, the lawsuit that's being brought against Governor DeSantis by Disney is an example where arguably a governor really did come out and say, I'm doing this to punish a political opponent. And sure enough, in that lawsuit, the First Amendment claim seems very strong. Here, we don't really have that.
Jimmy, thanks for that call. We're talking to UW-Madison political science professor emeritus Howard Schwaber about the newest lawsuit challenging Act 10 in Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the equal protection arguments we've been hearing about in this lawsuit? Do you think this is a valid argument to overturn Act 10? What do you think the courts will do, should do? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Howard Schwaber, political science professor emeritus, affiliate law school faculty at UW-Madison, with us today to look at the legal arguments in the latest lawsuit looking to overturn Act 10 in Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think Act 10 has been a positive for Wisconsin or a negative? Either way, what do you think of this legal challenge, this new legal challenge to it? Do you want to see it succeed or not? Join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or questions. That's 800-642-1234. Howard, another issue here. The newest justice, Janet Protasiewicz, seen as being on the liberal side of things, had told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel earlier this year that she would consider recusing herself from cases involving Act 10. Here's a listen.
You know, I'd have to think about it. I was interviewed by the New York Times, and they said, what do you think? Do you think that Act 10 was unconstitutional? And I said, yeah, I agree with the dissent in that case. You know, the dissent, I think Ann Walsh Bradley authored the dissent in that case. And I said, I do agree with the dissent in that case. Given the fact that I marched, given the fact that I signed the recall petition, would I recuse myself? Maybe, but I don't know for sure.
Okay, Howard, what should sway that maybe one way or the other in considering recusal?
Right, so it's worth pointing out that Brian Hagedorn was involved in giving legal advice to the legislature when this law was being drafted. So if there's a recusal argument here, it could apply to more than one justice. Really, this comes down to sort of the law versus, or the ethics versus the politics of it. On the law and ethics side, there's no need that I can see for Protasiewicz to recuse herself. She has expressed a legal opinion about a legal issue, and in that sense, you know, maybe said to have prejudged the question before, but it was on a lawsuit that was on a different legal theory. She has not expressed anything, as far as I know, on the specific equal protection argument that's being brought right now. And more generally, recusal is most appropriate where a judge or a justice has a personal interest in one of the parties, a financial interest, for example, or a personal relationship. You know, and in the past, we had a situation of conservative justices in Wisconsin not recusing themselves in cases involving questioning the legality of contributions to their own campaigns. So, you know, this whole recusal thing is a bit of a partisan hypocrisy on the legal side. Politically, however, Protasiewicz might want to think about recusing, particularly if she is able to canvass her fellow justices and determines that her vote wouldn't make any difference on the outcome. I'm obviously speculating wildly now, but looking down the road, by the time this thing does reach the state Supreme Court, if Justice Protasiewicz determines that there's enough of a majority one way or the other, that this case, that her vote won't change the case, it may be politically a wise thing to do just to demonstrate her impartiality. I fear that I've actually, in the interest of being simplifying, left out what might be the most important argument. So let me mention it very quickly. One argument that's being made is that even if there's a good basis for treating public safety employees different from general employees, the way this law works is dishonest because some public safety employees are treated differently than other public safety employees. So for example, Wisconsin State Police are exempt from Act 10, but Capitol Police and University of Wisconsin Police are not. Now, I would think there could be a rational basis of the sort that I described earlier for saying that a disruption in the operations of the state police is more dangerous to the state than a disruption in the operations of the Capitol Police or the University Police. But that might be, of all the elements of the complaint as I read it, that struck me as the strongest one because that becomes the argument, see, this really is a pretext. You don't really care about singling out public safety groups. You're really going after unions who don't support you. And if you want to show that kind of pretext, one way to do that is to show inconsistency in the application of the definition. So if there's a basis on which the Supreme Court might strike down Act 10, I think that would likely be it.
On the recusal issue, Chris and Dolivan called in a little while ago, couldn't stay on the line. Talking about pressure on Protasiewicz to recuse from any Act 10 case based on her previous comments. Chris says, so what? We elected her knowing what she said. Why should she recuse? He says, I don't get it. So does, I guess, a judge being judged by the voters erase comments that we might say would be prejudicial in a case she might hear in the future?
Right, that's exactly right. I mean, so if you have a lawsuit between, you know, Mr. Smith and Mrs. Jones, and the judge as a candidate said, boy, that Mrs. Jones is a terrible person. I would certainly rule in favor of Mr. Smith. That's a problem. That's indicating preference for a party. But of course we ask judges and judicial candidates their opinions on legal questions and constitutional issues, and we want them to tell them what they think. The alternative has become, right, the kind of charade we see in nominations to the Supreme Court where justices insist, oh, they've never considered, you know, whether there's a right to abortion or other constitutional questions. There are a couple of justices who arguably committed perjury who are sitting on the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court right now, on questions of that type. So, of course, it ought not to be disqualifying simply to have said, I feel X about a legal issue or a constitutional principle. This case comes a little closer in the sense that Act 10 applies to certain parties, these unions, and is a highly partisan issue. And Prozevich didn't just express an opinion. She also participated in protests and signed recall petitions. So, you know, perhaps there's more here. But I think the caller, Chris, is exactly right that this idea that you can push for recusal of a justice anytime they have a known philosophical position on a legal issue is just wrongheaded. And frankly, it's a created standard that's been manufactured this year.
In just our last half a minute or so, Howard, what, especially if there's something we haven't talked about, what are you watching for as this thing makes its way through the courts? Again, just in our last half minute.
Sure. Just which, so there are five or six different ways of framing the issue in the complaint. Which ones of them survive? And what is the more specific focus that this case will have by the time it gets to the Wisconsin Supreme Court?
Howard, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Howard Schwaber, professor of political science emeritus and affiliate faculty at the law school at the UW-Madison. He was with us today for a look at the latest lawsuit over Act 10 in Wisconsin, how it compares to previous attempts to overturn the law. If you have more questions about how this works, the procedure, we'd love to tackle them or share them with our news team. You can email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. You can follow reporting on this case. There's already been a lot. You can find it at WPR.org and then follow along as the case proceeds through the state court system. Again, find all of that at WPR.org or download the Wisconsin Public Radio app.